This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars episode number 13 was recorded on June 3rd, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. MI2 Partners founder Julian Brigden is back with us today. Julian, many people believe that the Fed will eventually spark some kind of inflationary wave. But boy, when you look at copper, emerging markets, and the dollar, it sure looks like there could be another deflationary wave ahead first. How do you think that assets are going to perform, equities, commodities, everything else, if the Fed cuts rates?
Thanks for having me on the show, first off, Eric. So I think, look, like all markets, there's ultimately an end view that you should have when, you know, where do you think we're going? And for those of you who are Macro Insider subscribers, you'll know, for example, that Raoul and I vehemently disagree on where we ultimately think the bond market's going. But then there's always a process to how you get there. So my view is ultimately, but I don't believe that the Fed has any inclination, I don't think any central bank really has any inclination to allow deflation, disinflation, call it, to become truly ingrained. They've become paranoid about this thing. They've become myopic about it in this singular determination to keep driving this cycle going. You know, we're already 10 years into a cycle. So punting the cycle at this point is not easy and arguably a little dangerous. I mean, if we punted here the last time, you know, in comparison to, say, spring of 2016, when, if you remember, we'd had a very rough year in 2015. We had a lot of weakness, both economic and in terms of the data. We'd had the Chinese devalue. The U.S. equity market was under pressure. The dollar was rampant. They come out of their meeting in Davos, and they're all panicky, all these central banks. And we get this sort of wave of crescendo of policy intervention, and they punt the cycle. But at that point, it was a low risk bet, right? I mean, they had, in the US, we had CPI at zero. We had average hourly earnings at 2.5, very low. We had unemployment above 5%. There were no risks in terms of, or very low risks in terms of additional policy input. Fast forward today, and at this point of the cycle, we can still see we're in the pain bit. We're in the bit that induces the central banks to ease, right? We've got equity weakness. We thought we'd be seeing it anyway. We really started to advise clients to start shorting equities back in September, particularly around these FANG and technology names. We think there was a whole slew of different trends that have been coalescing from overvaluation, but, you know, also this China trade breakdown. We'd written about that back in September. We said this is a long-term deterioration in the US-China relationship. It's got nothing really to do with trade. It's really about big boy geopolitics. We've also said that we thought there was going to be all the factors that have been supporting equities really since the late 80s when Thatcher and Reagan came to power and started this wave of deregulation, globalization, et cetera, et cetera. All of those factors were starting to turn. You know, we've seen that most recently. You know, today we're talking about the Justice Department going after various US companies. This stuff was always coming. And it's just, if you look at long-term historical trends, this is due, right? This is due. But the point is that just puts more burden on the central banks to intervene. It's just that the Fed, you know, the obvious central bank who's still got ammo left, mentally are not there yet. Right? They still look at unemployment, which is incredibly low. They look at growth numbers, which are really robust. But we just had crappy ISM numbers today. And I think we're going to get worse numbers next month. I think significantly worse numbers potentially next month. And to me, it's all coming to a crux. And the crux is when the Fed eases. Now, at that point, I think you could start to see a number of factors start to kick in. The first thing is I believe it's essential that whatever they do in terms of whether it's rate cuts and or QE, or more QE, certainly they've got to end QT, they've got to do enough to ensure that the dollar falls. Because without a weak dollar and a structurally weak dollar, one of the things that we've been stressing to our clients since the beginning of the year, and one of the reasons why, having played reflation trades back in January, we've become increasingly skeptical about the sustainability of those trends, has been the fact that in comparison to 2016, we have had little to no dollar weakness. Now, we think there are reasons for that, but the point is you can't have sustainable global reflation without the denominator of that reflation, the dollar, weakening. It's just impossible, because it literally is the denominator of all the asset prices we trade and all the portfolios we run. And you have to weaken that denominator in order to sustain reflation. So whatever they do out of the pain, which I believe is coming, accelerated by the trade tensions, has to be enough to weaken the dollar. Now, at that point, I think we enter a completely new cycle. The dollar is long overdue. If you go back and look at long-term historical patterns, it tends to fall very sharply, rise, make a lower high, fall again, rise, make a lower high. We are on the cusp of a fall. We are just not there yet, Eric, because we haven't created the conditions for the Fed to panic. And that's what it takes. It takes, in a way, a policy error. And I think we're heading to that point. And I think it's just going to unleash a slew of opportunity.
Julian, I want to ask you about a market sequencing question that has been really perplexing me. And I think it's very consistent with a lot of the views that you've just described. I just don't know what to expect next. And that is, you know, I think here, I feel like the bear market is upon us. I feel like if you look at what bond yields are telling us, we're headed towards a recession. You know, it's time to be short the stock market. I don't dare short the stock market here because, frankly, I don't know what this kabuki theater is with the trade deal. But boy, if they pulled a rabbit out of a hat and all of a sudden there's a trade deal, and especially if Bolton got fired and there's no more war with Iran on the table, you could suddenly see a vicious rally to all-time highs again. Yet maybe if that takes 6 months to play out, by then the economic conditions will be so bad that there is no more rally. So I'm trying to figure out, is there still a risk of a rally to new all-time highs, or is it time to really be short in size in the stock market?
I mean, eventually we could go to new highs again, but I think it's going to take policy response. So I think it's going to take monetary easing, you know, not just rate cuts, I think more QE. And I think it's going to take possibly fiscal as well to get us to new highs. So I don't think the immediate prospect is there for new highs. I mean, a bounce, oh gosh, Eric, I mean, this stuff, as you know, is tweet by tweet, right? It's incredibly difficult to time. But I do think the structural forces are in place to induce a little bit more pain at this point. And I think, you know, we've seen a massive rally in the fixed income markets. And I would say at this point, they've discounted an awful lot, not necessarily saying too much, but they've discounted an awful lot. And so really, from a risk reward perspective, what you're supposed to be looking at now is stocks. So if you think we're going to induce the Fed to ease, which I do, I think we could, you know, don't get me wrong, to your point, if we got a little bit of a bounce here because maybe we had some detente, or let's say short-term rapprochement, I think is probably a better term rather than a detente, I think we are entering a full-blown Cold War in terms of tech and telecoms. And I don't think anything is going to move to address that particular concern. But if you do think we've got some sort of interim trade deal that carries us through to 2020 coming, you could certainly see a bounce in stocks, but I think that's insufficient. I mean, my work very much suggests that we are in a horrible place whereby you, because we are living in this increasingly asset supported world, let's say, you know, it's asset prices that determine CEOs' behavior. It's asset prices in Europe that determine consumer behavior. It's asset prices that determine credit officers' behavior. So in an environment where asset prices stop rising, it elicits a feedback loop, which is unsustainable. it essentially is almost like the old economic theory of a paradox of thrift. You know, you and your wife are sitting at home and she says, come on, darling, let's go out for dinner. And you go, you know, I had this conversation with my boss at work and I'm really not feeling all that good about the world. And so you don't go out to dinner. 3 months later, the restaurant that you were going to go to closes down. Et voila, you have your recession. So in other words, it's behavior and it's the actual instigation of that behavior, which is orientated to avert an event, actually creates the very outcome. And I'm afraid when I look at the way that asset prices interact with confidence, with spending, with employment, et cetera, even stable asset prices are not enough to stop, particularly the US, sliding into recession. And so even if we were to get a bounce, Eric, that to me doesn't do anything to kick this economy into the next level of growth and to punt the cycle. I'm afraid we would just, as opposed to accelerating down into a recession, which I think we're in danger of doing now, particularly given my view on what's going on the trade side. But even if we got some sort of rapprochement, I'm afraid that early next year, the economy would continue to lose momentum as weak-ish asset prices and even, as I said, stable asset prices start to weigh on behavioral response functions.
Julian, let me ask another follow-up question, because due to my concern about the risk of a vicious rally, I've tried to express my bearish view by using a trade that our mutual friend Alex Gurevich recommended on this program, which was long the two-year Treasury futures. And the logic when I put that trade on is, hey, I know the Fed's going to cut eventually. And when they cut, it's got to be good for two-year futures. The thing is, Julian, that was a while ago. It's gone fantastically in my favor. Should I still be waiting for the cut? Or are we getting to one of those sell the news situations where so much has already been priced into two-year futures that anything, you know, less than a 50 basis point cut would be a disappointment that would just turn the market around? Do you think it's time to take profits on that trade or stay with it?
You raise an interesting dilemma, Eric, because it has moved an awful long way. We sort of starting in early March basically came out and said the Fed needs to cut. They need to cut quickly. And yet 2 year yields at that point were 250. Right? We're 185 at the moment. And, you know, having just come back from a trip to see clients, it's very interesting to see that the questions have partly reflected that move. You've gone from, okay, I know they've got to cut, to questions that are, okay, which month do they cut? Exactly how much do they cut? So it is a significantly riskier trade at this point. The risk reward has deteriorated significantly. You know, that said, I think they're going to cut, right? But just overnight, we've gone from pricing in another 25 basis points into euro dollars, right? So we basically went overnight to pricing in 100 basis points of cuts over the next couple of years. That's risky. That's risky at this point because the Fed mentally isn't there. I think they're going to get there. I think they'll get there in the next couple of months pretty damn quickly. By the July FOMC, I think they could easily be there. But that's essentially priced into markets at this point. So, you know, I'm not sure that that is the risk off trade anymore. I just don't think it is.
Julian, this interview right now is going to air on Tuesday morning, June 4th. But later in the evening on June 4th, or more likely first thing on the morning of June 5th, we're launching a brand new full-length podcast format on the Macro Voices Network. It's a new show called Inside the Investment Committee. The whole idea is that we pick some poor soul, put them in the hot seat, and get them to pitch a really important trade idea, whether it be in current markets or in past experience, to a panel of their peers who are going to hold them accountable for whether or not that trade idea really made sense, looking at the upside and downside risks, regardless of which way the trade worked out. And you, sir, got suckered into being in the hot seat for our very first inaugural episode. And you've got some really strong critics in the form of Alex Gurevich and Juliette de Klerk there to keep you honest.
Let's say potential critics, Eric, potential critics.
Well,
you might agree with me.
They're there to keep you honest and make sure that you do not substitute luck for skill, because it certainly is easy to do that in this business. And the whole idea of this show format is to make sure we hold our panelists accountable and don't let you substitute luck for skill. That's the job of the other panelists. You're the guy who got the very first up at pitching an idea. How about a teaser? Give us a sense of what idea you're going to pitch to the other panelists. Will it be current markets or past markets? And what's the trade?
So it's going to be past markets. We're going to look at why I turned bearish on the bond market in the sort of summer of 2016. I'm not picking it because I think we got the trade right. I'm picking it because I think it's actually quite a potentially poignant frame of reference and an approach that I think has relevance in the current market. Not right this second, but I think over the next potential few months. Hence, I just wanted to share with people how and why back then I was thinking about the market. Because I think, you know, for your listeners, as they try to sit and around and construct the mental steps and the checks that they have to make as they approach a macro trade, I think this is kind of one of those classics.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this one, Julian, because we've got our other panelists there to keep you honest, and we're going to do several things. We're going to talk through that trade, why you made it, how it worked out, but then we're going to talk through what's happened in the market since then, and we're going to get the perspective of all of our panelists as to what comes next, because it may be, as much as you and Raul Paul have disagreed, he could still be proven right. He didn't say when we were going to get 50 basis point 10-year yields. So we're going to discuss the trade, why you were so right for as long as you were right, what has changed since we saw that high mark in bond yield, and yields have been collapsing for the last several months since the end of last year. We'll talk that through and we'll see if we can apply the wisdom of what you learned from that trade in 2016 to maybe the setup for a new trade in 2019. So folks, that's coming up tentatively late on Tuesday evening. This is a brand new show format, so give us a little bit of leeway. It may not be until Wednesday the 5th that show hits your Macro Voices feed, but it's a new format that we're really excited about. So please give a listen. Julian, before I let you go, please tell our listeners where they can follow your work and learn more about what you do at MI2 Partners.
So we have three product offerings, one for sort of institutional accounts, which is the MI2 product. You can get hold of us at support@mi2partners.com. For other people, so we say retail or active traders, we have the Macro Insider product, which we put out with Raul. You can also get hold of us at the same MI2 email. Or alternatively, if you just want to follow me on Twitter, it's @JulianMI2.
Fantastic. Well, we'll look forward to having you back on All Stars in a couple of weeks with another update. And we'll see you tomorrow, sir, for the showdown with Alex and Juliet over bond yields. And it should be an interesting ride. Folks, we've got all kinds of exciting content. We've got the new Inside the Investment Committee. We've got another episode of Macro Voices Energy Week. Of course, we've got the Thursday night podcast, and we've even got Jeff Snyder making his debut on Macro Voices All-Stars on Friday morning. So stay tuned to your Macro Voices feed for more exciting content. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.